Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle.
Money FM 89.3, you're listening to Singapore's most influential radio station. And yes, you're in the breakfast huddle with Elliot Danker, me, Manisha Tank, and Ryan Huang. We'll get some more business headlines from Ryan just up ahead. I tell you what, Elliot, it's been a really busy morning in the studio today. And it's been a really busy season in India over the last month or so.
Yeah, the latest headline was the unprecedented move to suspend the visas of many travelers to the country to stem the spread of the COVID-19 coronavirus. Bold move, I gotta say, but could deal a blow to India's otherwise flourishing tourism sector.
Yeah, think incredible India. Well, like China, India is a country of 1.3 billion people, has a rich and colourful history, a large economy and a massive customer base, but also like its neighbour, it's running growth projections this year of more than 5%.
It's a good selling point for their Prime Minister Narendra Modi, who plans to put some of the country's biggest state-owned companies up for sale.
However, India has not been without its political tensions recently. Rioting in the capital has recently made global news. And on the economic front, high unemployment, a budget gap. And that's before we talk about COVID-19. There's a lot for foreign investors to weigh up.
Singapore, however, has a healthy and strong relationship with the country in terms of security and culture. Guess what? Singapore is also the world's biggest foreign direct investor in India.
So here to talk about that relationship and much, much more, His Excellency Javed Ashraf, who is India's High Commissioner to Singapore. A very warm welcome to the studio, Javed. How are you?
Good, thank you. Good morning. Really early on a Monday morning.
You almost lost track of the day. I think that indicates busy you've been.
Right.
So look, you're a really keen climber and a photographer, I hear. Have you enjoyed Bukit Timah Hill while you've been in Singapore?
I actually have. It's a nice little workout.
Well, it's good to know, good to know.
High Commissioner, spring is here. Many in India celebrated the Colour Festival of Holi last week, but it feels like we're kind of metaphorically stuck in a bit of a winter. Bit of a roller coaster season. Could you share your thoughts on it?
Well, you're right. First of all, we're all concerned about COVID-19. We've tried to stay ahead of the curve when it was first announced on January 7 by China that there is a new strain of the virus. We immediately set up a surveillance and a monitoring committee. We've taken a number of bold and quick steps, which I think will help us a great deal. We've put a lot of border restrictions, universal screening at all 30 airports. As you're aware, we've suspended visas for foreigners for a month, starting 13th March and going up till April 15th. This also suspends visa-free travel for overseas Indian citizens, and they also require visas to go to India now. And so, but we will permit travel for compelling reasons, such as medical emergencies or tragedies in the family. We're also discouraging non-essential travel abroad by Indians. And there are seven countries for which we have instituted mandatory quarantine on arrival. These are the most affected countries. Indian nationals returning from those countries will also be subject to quarantine. So, and there's been an advisory to refrain from travel to these seven countries. So we've taken some strong measures. Screening, testing is really expanding rapidly, contact tracing and so on and so forth. We've so far had 107 cases, mostly triggered by import through tourists.
Right, right.
And Indians returning from abroad. So that's something we're concerned about.
So you've implemented these measures, but, you know, just looking at it from an economic standpoint, I guess the trade-off is worth it. You've had this flourishing tourism sector, but it's really important that, you know, you have to lock things down. I mean, there are the risks for that part of your economy.
You're absolutely right. And usually Feb, March, April are pretty high tourist seasons for India. But I think health is far more important than the short-term setback in tourism. And I think that's something everyone recognizes. And I'd also say that we are trying to take some additional measures. And it's important. Yesterday, Prime Minister Narendra Modi hosted a video conference with SAARC, or South Asian leaders, with their eight members in South Asian Association for Regional Cooperation, SAARC. And we've pledged $10 million for support to other countries in the region, and we've suggested creation of a COVID-19 emergency fund. We've also offered to keep our rapid response teams ready to support any of our neighboring countries in case they have a need in the event of a major increase in the numbers. We've also suggested that we can offer training. As you're aware, we've sent some of our doctors and healthcare workers to Maldives at their request, and we've also pulled out Indians from Iran, China, and Italy as of yesterday.
Meanwhile, you've been in the news for other reasons. You wrote an op-ed for the Straits Times on India's budget. So that was last month. So much has changed since then.
Yes.
You know,
that was for Business Times.
Yeah. Oh, Business Times. Forgive me. So much has changed since then. For example, by Friday of last week, we saw this rally on the US stock markets, but we saw the Indian rupee fall to a record low. We also saw Yes Bank collapse in recent weeks. And that's been a real burden. I think a lot of foreign investors right now would be asking for reassurances. And what could you say to them?
Well, I think stock market for decline, I think, is a common phenomenon across the world. I think markets are responding to what is really an unprecedented situation and one that no one had forecasted. But I think in general, you know, you have to put things in a perspective. We had averaged a 7.4% growth per year over the last 5 years. It slowed down to 5%. There are, of course, continuing challenges in the financial sector. Much of what you're seeing now is, in some sense, the cleaning up process of a rather unhealthy growth in the financial sector in terms of quality of credit. That's all coming home now. So yes, we saw the collapse of the Yes Bank, but we've also seen a very quick and a prompt response from the government. Now we're seeing the state-owned State Bank of India coming in with a restructuring plan, and we're quite confident that we'll put the bank back on the rails. Broadly speaking, I think the government is cognizant of the fact that there is a slowdown in demand, and it is doing all it can on all the fronts, which means to boost consumer spending. We've cut down income tax. We've also made credit cheaper, done a lot of things to improve the housing market, including extension of tax reliefs for both buyers and developers. We've seek government spending was set to rise 21% in this year. We've also slashed our corporate income tax, abolished the dividend distribution tax, and done a number of measures on rationalization of customs duties to reverse this tariff inversion to boost manufacturing in India. There's a lot of measures to improve working capital to small and medium enterprises, and there's a very generous package of tax incentives for startups in India. So on all the fronts that is required to boost demand, consumer spending, in government spending, investment, and of course, we are taking a lot of measures to strengthen the financial market, including by providing for greater role for foreign portfolio investors, both in the equity and the bond markets this year, and by also continuing with some tax incentives for foreign investors.
Hi, Commissioner. Just to add on to that, is there still room in the tank for more special off-budget measures? And the IMF did talk about offering $50 billion US to help with regard to the coronavirus outbreak. Is this something that India could look to tap on?
Well, I think, first of all, I'd say this, that we don't particularly feel the need for financial support. And I think there are other countries that might need it more. As I have said, we've ourselves suggested setting up a COVID-19 emergency fund for our region. And Prime Minister Modi has pledged $10 million last evening in that video conference. I should also emphasize that we're very conscious of the fact that we should not be profligate and spend our way out of trouble or to boost growth, because there are perils associated with it, and it could have a serious downside risk if we let our budget deficit go beyond what is prudent. And
I just wanted to get a very quick take on how you think India will be economically impacted by this coronavirus, because everybody's trying to take its measure right now.
Well, obviously, we've seen the impact of disruption in supply chain, particularly from China in January and February in particular, because, you know, China is the biggest source of import. Obviously, exports will be hurt somewhat from this outbreak, but our impact is going to be probably less than in many other countries, because we're still a pretty domestically driven economy. We are integrated globally, and trade is an important element. But there is also the silver lining to this, and that is the crash in the oil prices. You know, oil is the bill is the largest source for our import bill, and what we can do with this is to actually improve our fiscal deficit position, because the government has already raised the tax on oil and diesel products, petroleum and diesel products. And the oil companies are absorbing that because they are in a position to do that and yet not allow the price of fuel to go up. So that's going to be a great advantage to us as we go ahead in the year.
I like a silver lining. We are speaking to His Excellency Javed Ashraf, India's High Commissioner to Singapore, in what's been a very, very busy month for the country. You know, on the 24th and the 25th of February, one of the most trending Google searches in America was, where is India? And it was all because Donald Trump was visiting.
Yeah.
You know, he boldly attempted to pronounce the names of Sachin Tendulkar and Virat Kohli. And I know you're a big cricket fan. I mean, jokes aside, it was a speech that was written for the masses.
Yes, of course. And first, when you said it, what was the Google trending, where is India, just shows the level of knowledge and geography in some countries. But yes, it was a very important visit. And I think the highlight was, of course, besides the bilateral conversation, this mass gathering of 129,000 people at the stadium in Ahmedabad, where Prime Minister Narendra Modi and President Donald Trump addressed the gathering. You know, one of the important facets of this relationship is that it is something that we've taken it into the public domain. And it's very important to communicate to our public directly about the importance of certain partnerships. And certainly United States is a very important strategic partner for us. It wasn't always the case, but it's really been a transformation in the past 20 years. And so it was an important occasion for the two largest democracies to speak directly to the people and to convey what the importance of this relationship was for their countries and for their people.
Hi, Commissioner. I'd like to talk about palm oil and Malaysia. This is a sensitive one. India hasn't quite welcomed criticism by the previous Prime Minister, Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, over a citizenship law deemed to target the Muslims, also the subject of recent riots in Delhi. Very sensitive. How much better could they possibly have been handled? Malaysia's palm oil industry hit quite hot. Will imports to India resume at any point? Anything you might be able to share with us?
I'd like to answer a couple of points there. First, of course, let me get through with this issue of palm oil. Well, even before this situation developed, there was a surge in imports of refined palm oil in India. And that was the result of the reduction in customs duty arising out of the India-Malaysia Comprehensive Economic Cooperation Agreement. And that hurt the domestic refiners in India. So we first took a measure to move the refined palm oil from open general license to a restricted list, which means you required permits to import refined. And then, of course, the crude palm oil was on open general license, so anybody could import it. We saw certainly a reduction in imports from certain countries during the past couple of months. We certainly hope that we can see the resumption or increase, but a large number of those decisions are really not something that the governments get involved with. It's especially when an item is on open general license, it's really up to the importers to make those decisions. But the possibility that the refined palm oil will continue to remain on the restricted list to support domestic refiners, that continues to exist. But we hope to see how it returns to normal.
Very sensitive diplomatic issues, I'm sure.
But let me answer one more question. And you said that the CAA targets Muslims, the Citizenship Amendment Act.
Yeah.
I think there's a misunderstanding around that.
Okay. Right.
And something which I'd like to explain, which is that it does not concern citizens of India of any religion, of any background. There are strong constitutional, inviolable constitutional guarantees to all citizens of India, regardless of their background, religion, and beliefs. This is about providing a path to citizenship in India to illegal immigrants or refugees, you can call them either, who were fleeing religious persecution in three of our neighboring countries, which is Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. This isn't something that, say, for example, in Bangladesh, this has happened recently, or in Afghanistan, it actually happened during the Taliban era. So these are people who were fleeing religious persecution because they belonged to minority religions in those countries.
Okay.
And therefore, there was a moral obligation. They've been living like stateless people in India for a very long time. And our current Citizenship Act does not provide for citizenship for those who came in as refugees, fleeing religious persecution.
Right.
So this amendment is a one-time measure for those who came into India before December 31, 2014. So it's very important to understand what this does and what it does not do. So it in no way targets or seeks to deprive Muslims in India or people of any other religious background of their rights and their place in the country.
Right. So it's clearly it's a very complicated and particularly domestic issue as well that's been seen in a particular way around the world. I'm going to move things on because,
yes.
you know, because of timing is always short. And I really want to talk about your relationship with Singapore,
yes.
because an incredible relationship. It goes back a long way and a serious amount of foreign domestic investment in India from Singapore. I mean, talk to us about that relationship.
Well, really, I think it is one of our strongest relationships. Of course, it has ancient roots, but excellent political relations, a lot of warmth and goodwill, no doubts and hesitation, no contests and claims. We have a very strong, growing and robust defense partnership, probably among the strongest for both countries. And it just goes to show that, you know, asymmetry in size is no barrier to the depth and scale of our relationship. It drives itself from our common belief in a region that is defined by international rules and norms, that is open, balanced and inclusive, that is not subject to domination by any one power or torn in great power rivalry. So there are a lot of common convergent views in what we believe the world in particular, this region, the Indo-Pacific region, should be. And that's a principal driver of this relationship. And so far as our strategic partnership is concerned, we, of course, have a very great economic partnership. It could do certainly much more. Just as Singapore is a leading and currently the top foreign direct investor in India, it is also a major source of external commercial borrowings for Indian corporates and certainly a leading source of foreign portfolio investments in India. Likewise, Singapore is the leading destination for overseas investments by Indians.
Right.
Just the cumulative investments by Singapore and India stands at about $95 billion. From India into Singapore, it's at about $68 billion. We have a really exciting new partnership in the realm of technology, innovation and fintech. We are pioneering some new initiatives. So I could just go on and talk about the wonderful dimensions of our relationship. Yes.
I know you could, but sadly, we have to leave it there. Let me wrap that up. Good luck. I know you're moving to France. I hope they keep the borders open so that you can make your big journey over to Paris. But for now, thanks so much for joining us. His Excellency Javed Ashraf, India's High Commissioner to Singapore.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.